So before in the room, are there any out? Hey, that's called the AA salute or handshake. In the words of the late comic Mitch Hedberg, alcoholism is the only disease for which you get yelled at. You don't yell at someone who's got cancer or diabetes. Damn it, I thought you were in remission. What happened? I want to visit all my friends in Al-Anon. Hello. But, and I especially love the double winners. You're the kind who probably sits and nudges yourself. Did you hear that? I'm being silly. I know some people in Al-Anon get very upset when you call them double winners. I said, just, you're a single winner. What the heck? In the damn path. I love what Paulie Pistol says. If you're an alcoholic, if you strip away the alcoholic, you've got a flaming Al-Anon. So we all belong. We all belong. I don't have a qualifier per se. My former wife is a recovering alcoholic, but I don't refer to her as my qualifier. There's no such word in our Al-Anon literature from what I understand. That's just me, alcoholic in your life. I don't know why we call them my alcoholic. Even in that literature that the alcoholic speaks to the family, your alcoholic. I don't need alcohol. I don't want to take alcoholics to an alcoholic park and play with alcoholics. My alcoholic. I don't want to possess an alcoholic. But I'm very grateful to the sickness of alcoholism. Very grateful. They say that, you know, I like what Abraham Lincoln said, and I'm going to start with that. It says, it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. So I truly am a fool, and I'm sitting amongst greater fools here because we found the sickness of alcoholism to bring us to a path of spiritual healing. What a trip. We didn't have to go to a cave someplace or sit in a church or a temple or what have you. We'd have our jobs, we go to work, we have our businesses, we raise children, we have families, and we trudge this path of 12 steps. What an amazing deal. And I was watching, the black actor, it'll come to me. Anyway, he does a lot of the spiritual stuff. And he was talking to this guy who was a Buddhist. He was actually quite white, he must have converted. And he said something that struck me between the eye, and this is what this program to me is all about. He said the fish, they believe the fish don't swim, they're carried. Birds don't fly, they're carried. And he said we too are carried. And this program has carried me from a place I don't recognize anymore. I don't recognize the person I was. That person is dormant in me, it hasn't gone away. I still haven't developed gossamer wings or have a halo on my head. In fact, I asked my sponsor one time, I said, how do you know you've arrived in Al-Anon? He says, when you're twice as good as your wife thinks you are and half as good as you think you are. And that hasn't occurred yet. So anyway, I don't recall the moment I walked into Al-Anon. It was late fall 1980 in Detroit, Michigan, outside of Detroit, Michigan. But I can tell you to the moment when she walked into AA, May 25th, 1983, Edmonton. My focus was on the outside. And in doing my fourth step and looking back at my past, I look at the genesis of my defects of character. I qualified for Al-Anon on May 11th, 1952 at 10:40 p.m. in Bombay, India. Nature and nurture. My family was a family of refugees, but what I mean by that is they grew up in what is now Pakistan. It used to be India. And they apparently had a lot of prestige and pride and prosperity. And they left it all behind, excuse me, and came to Bombay, India as refugees where I was born. And the mantra in the house was image management. What will they say? So there was no introspective work going on. It was always, how am I going to appear to the outside world? How do you walk? How do you talk? What do you say to whom? And who do you hang out with? There was no talk about feelings. If you were crying, they'd say, you were crying, let me give you a good reason to cry. There's no art of communication because children are meant to be seen, not heard. I guess a lot of us have grown up in similar fam. Maybe your all parents are from Pakistan. I don't know. So my focus for my entire life, a lady in my Al-Anon meeting described it beautifully. She said the disease in Al-Anon is dis-ease, the insides not matching the outsides. Mine was complete distortion. The insides are not matching the outside. You wouldn't know how I felt. You wouldn't know what was going on inside. I didn't know what was going on inside. I was not in denial when I came across alcoholism. I was clueless because I was so full of myself and so arrogant in terms of the way I didn't have this cognitive understanding that I was arrogant or that I had a big ego. I was very insecure as well, and I just didn't know it. And it's recently, a friend of mine, not too long ago, gave me a book to read. He's a devout Catholic. And he gave me a book on what appeared to be the Old Testament. And I thought he was proselytizing and wanted me to convert to Catholicism or something. Instead, it turned out to be a book on death psychology. And it talked about the four characters in the Old Testament that had to go through a lot of turpitude, a lot of pain to get to the other side in terms of becoming individuated. And I didn't know that my God had a plan for me. I don't look upon God as a universal thing in terms of, then I start asking questions, why the misery in Syria or what's going on in Afghanistan? To me, it has to be a very personal thing, just the way it is for me. In fact, my wife and I were having a discussion one time, early on in our relationship. I was trying to proselytize to her why she shouldn't be as Greek Orthodox as she is. And she asked me a very poignant question. She said, so what's your God? I said, God for me is an experience. So what do you mean? I said, if I have a spoonful of honey and you have a spoonful of honey, neither of us can tell the other what sweet is. It has to be very, very personal. Even the Greek church that we go to, by the way, I was born in a Hindu family, raised around, went to Catholic school, grew up around Muslims, Christians, Protestants, and what have you. And then one day in a moment of passion, my present wife, we've been married almost 12 years, I said, Vicky, where would you like to get married? And she said, my Greek church. So I researched and it says you have to be converted over 10, 15 years and you have to bring a goat to your father-in-law and all that stuff. And she said, are you kidding me? And so we went and met with the priest of the church and he said, no, we'll dunk some olive oil on you and you'll be Greek. So I now have a new label, Greek Orthodox. And they gave me a Greek name, Victoras. So I enjoy the Greek language. When you say yes, you say yes and nay, nay, which means as no. And if you say no, it's okie, okie, which means it's okay. And it's very confusing. Yeah, nay, nay, okie, okie. So I have all these labels and I'm recognizing it's all part of the ego. I'm caught in form. I miss out on the essence. So here I am. I grew up in the wonderful world of Bombay, India, very sparsely populated city. In a very sparsely populated country, 1.4 billion. We've outdone the Chinese, damn it. Okay. But I've been here. I landed from India in 1974, and I've been here longer than I was there. So give me another name. American Indian or Indian American? Greek Indian American. God, I think we need an intergalactic battle of some kind, so you'll all be earthlings and forget about all this other stuff. When we had 9/11, sad as it was, we all became American. There were no Republicans, no Democrats, no this, no that. We were all American. So I think it takes an attack for us to realize that we're all just one in one sense. And I've read someplace, I'm reading a book by an author, and I won't mention any non-Al-Anon conference approved stuff, but in that he says that if you compare your insides to someone's outside, where you think you're less than or better than, that's ego. But if you say I'm equal to, that's ego as well. And I have to really ponder on that because then still a process of comparison. So anyway, coming to the world of Al-Anon, they say Al-Anon is for those whose lives have been affected by someone else's thinking. It's a fellowship. I like the word fellowship because if you go to a Buddhist temple, you'll see two lions staring at you from the outside. And as Joseph Campbell says in his book, He says, the lions are not trying to keep you out. They're telling you to leave everything you have about you behind and come in. And that's what Al-Anon is for me. They don't care about the degrees, don't care about the job, don't care about the money, don't care about anything. We just come here as kindred souls, if you will. Now, I didn't care about the fact that the American woman smoked, but I loved the fact that she drank. It's like, candy is dandy, liquor's quicker. You hung around with guys like me. It made my path in an evening quite expedient. I wasted my life with this idiocy that I was doing. I can't blame the alcoholic for my defects of character. For God's sake, they were there. She just provided the soil for the things to germinate and show up and what have you. I refer to the alcoholic in my life as my angel. Her sickness, and I don't wish the sickness upon anyone, but if you are living with anyone living here with active alcoholism, see, mine wasn't very active. She was sedentary. She would sit on the couch. I'm teasing. No skiing after a couple of drinks. But if you have an alcoholic at home, go and thank them. Thank them and say, thank you for getting me into a program that allows me to reveal myself to myself. Because the word alcohol, as you all know, is mentioned once in the first step. It's never mentioned again. And instead, I'm so glad in the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening. It doesn't say, having found a way to get the alcoholic sober. I now wrote a book about it and carried the message through Oprah. So anyway, I met my spouse while I was, they said, those who can do, others teach. I was a part-time lecturer at the university in Detroit. And I was sitting at a local pub called Traffic Jams. And this woman who was working her way through nursing school came and waited at our table. And we Al-Anons, whether you recognize or not, carry a little beam in our head. Alcoholic? No, don't waste your time. Because it doesn't get meaning to my life unless I'm managing yours. So so my beam took off. I said, I'll make her excuses, tell her lies, mend her damaged relationships, blah, blah, blah. And her beam went off and said, here's the moron who's going to do all this for me. I asked her out. She said yes. And we went on a date the following week. My God has a sense of humor. Thank God. Mine is infantile, but God's is not. Very cerebral. And allows me to just fall and have fun watching me do it. So I went on a date with this woman before the date, and we had dinner. Normally, when I went to dinner with a woman, I listened with an open ear, mind, I should say, in one ear, out the other. Because I'm strategizing. That gentleman with the beard is nodding because he's been there too. We sat there for 3 hours, indulging in intellectual intercourse, in my case, pseudo-intellectual, and surprised me. And we go to this party, and a friend walks up and says, oh, how long have you two been dating? 8, 9 years? You look so comfortable together. I said, George, I just met her last week. And he said, oh. And I'm thinking, oh, it's an Indian thing, maybe past life. Now, this is the only time I proselytize. If you're that comfortable with someone on your first date, one of you needs to leave, because the rocks in their head are filling the holes in yours. Trust me, been there, done that. The journey had started. The journey had started to the destruction of the ego, to the smashing, not destruction, because the ego cannot be destroyed. It can only be transcended. The destruction had started. The four gentlemen in that Old Testament that went through the pain, I didn't know it was starting for me. It was starting right at that moment where I thought that I'd known this woman for 8 years when I dated her for about a week or two. And 4 months later, we moved in, and I had no clue that this woman was going to bring me to a place of called Al-Anon down the road. And so, you know, here we are. She's Polish Catholic. Her mother's very Catholic, disavows sinful alliances like living together. But the scary part was watching her mother helping her move in with me. That should have been a blazing red flag saying something is not right. So we lived in sinful bliss for about 15 minutes. Then came whatever attacked my image management, every time she talked, she yelled in one sense. That's what perception, all screaming, yelling, doors. And I'm walking around saying, what will they say? What will the neighbors say? What will the neighbors say? And she looked at me and said, who do you think you are? Some stuffed shirt, you Prince Charles? Why can't you yell? I said, what will they say? What will they say? My life had been a bane on my existence for the longest time, being so confused about who I am, not knowing, pretending to be something I'm not. I was like the character Zelig in the movie by Woody Allen, if you've seen it. If you're a jazz artist, I'm a jazz artist. If you're a doctor, I become a doctor. If you're a philosopher, right there with you. Whatever you are, you change colors in your skin, I'm right there. A chameleon of sorts. That's a sad way to grow up, but I didn't know any better. So clueless, they say ignorance is bliss. Perhaps it was in my case. So here I am, squealing of tires, noise, and what have you. And I said, we got to bring an end to this. So we did the next indicated thing. The lady knows, we got married. Marry and move into this little town home in Warren, Michigan. If you're from Warren, be grateful you're here. That's fantastic. By the way, happy 47th. That's pretty cool. I didn't know, and I'll just touch upon this for some of the new stuff, because you've been through all this stuff with looking for booze and what have you. But this condo had a small half bathroom that I did not know turned out to be her bar. And this is how clueless I am, is to walk into the bathroom, open the cabinet door, 6 or 7 empty cans of beer would topple out. And I would walk up to my wife and she would look at me like I had 6 heads and say, I said, Susan, what were those empty cans of beer doing outside the trash can? And why were they in there? And she looked at me like, this guy's from Mars, I guess, I don't know. So she said, oh, Aunt Bunny came over and had a few beers. It never occurred to me to ask Aunt Bunny, why do you take a 6-pack into the bathroom for that? Are you trying to expedite the process? I don't know. This is how clueless I am until image management came into play, where my family had moved into the area and I was going to introduce them to the white sheep of the family. I get in the car and I smell whatever I smelled and I said, I can't take you in this condition. You're going to go back home. And she stomped out of the car, and for some damn reason, I followed her. I followed her, and she ran into her bar, and she didn't know that I had followed, and she's trying to shut the door to the cabinet, and then there was a big gallon jug of Gallo wine or whatever. And at that moment, all cluelessness dissipated, and I looked at it, and a little voice in my head said, she's an alcoholic, she's an alcoholic, she's an alcoholic, she's an alcoholic. And I said to myself, oh, my God. And a voice from God would have come in and said, you know what? You're not going to be you anymore. You're going to think her thoughts, experience her emotions. When she's feeling right, you're going to feel right. The way she says good morning to you, you'll know that she's been drinking or not drinking. You're going to be totally enmeshed into this woman. And I said, God, you're wrong. It won't happen to me. But that's exactly what happened for the next 3.5 years. And then the next voice said, I'll take care of it. Why? Because I've been watching this television commercial where the woman walks up to her husband and says, darling, you have a drinking problem. He says, sweetheart, you're so right. I think an alcoholic wrote that commercial. And they go off to aversion treatment. Now, I believe in the Robert Patman Act, which is truth in advertising. And I walked up to my wife and I said, darling, you have a drinking problem. And she said, you're an idiot. I don't. They say in Al-Anon, at least have plan B, C, D, and E. I didn't have plan B. My plan B was I'll catch her in the act and she'll know I know and she'll stop drinking. So if you have a lot of time on your hands and not much of a life and you want to catch your husband in the act of consumption, I would sit on a couch staring at a blank television set, pretending to do the crossword puzzle so I look discreet enough. And I would look at the reflection coming in from the television. And it was reflecting what was going on in the kitchen. And she would drink and put her bottles back, and I'd make this Archimedean explanation like I've discovered a new law in physics. Aha! So a friend of mine, we were talking about him earlier, Scott Redmond, he said, I don't have a drinking problem, I have a stopping problem. I said, oh my God, I wish I'd known that then. So then she'd go up and I'd get around, move all the bottles around, thinking when she gets up for her 2 o'clock feed time, she'll know that I know and she'll stop drinking. friend of mine who happens to be, I have some wonderful friends in alcohol. Some of my best friends are in AA. I know that sounds terrible. I say that for jest. Came up to me and said, Ajit, we keep our stuff in 16,000 different places so we don't have to look for it. I was almost arrested for molesting my vacuum cleaner because I thought I was pawing that stupid bag to see if she'd been hiding it in there. Well, life went on. And I won't talk about the pre-days too long. We had fights all the time. There was physical violence from her end and mine pushing it away. My choice of weapon was my tongue, sarcasm. I would just hit her hard. Sorry, it's not sarcasm. I was blessed with acerbic wit, which I practiced all the time. So, God, it wasn't until I read in my One Day at a Time that the word sarcasm comes from the Greek sarcasm, which is to tear flesh. And I was indulging in cannibalism of the worst kind. I was destroying a spirit because this woman did not have the command of the language like I did, relatively speaking. I don't have much of it, but relatively speaking, and I could tear her down one side the other without raising a finger. And for that, I have been, now it's very difficult for me to not be sarcastic, but it's abated significantly. When someone says, to make a long story short, my mind says, it's already too late, I want to leave. It's, and someone says, you know, three times in a sense, I know, you don't need to tell me anymore. And I have to just quell that because I take contrary action. And so I know, of my sponsor taught me, since step seven, the word remove does not mean extinguish or eliminate. It simply means it's been moved. So it'll show up at any given time. So I know that sarcastic side of me remains somewhere. Like my wife, I'm leaving at 10 o'clock. She said, are you leaving? I said, no. She said, are you leaving right now? I said, I'm leaving at 10 o'clock, not tomorrow. But I don't say the second part. I keep the, yes, I'm leaving right now at 10 o'clock. So I have to watch that because it's not disappeared. It's dissipated. It's there somewhere. And the key part about this program is awareness. Awareness, awareness, awareness before I take action. You know, we go to an out meeting in New York and they have a acronym for PAUSE, prevent action until serenity emerges. And I was listening to a neurologist. I'll repeat that for you so you can write it down. Prevent action, I assume the lady writing it down. Prevent action until serenity emerges. And I was listening to this neurologist. And she said that when you are hit with something, someone says something to you, does something to you, it's your lizard brain that takes into action, flight or fee. But if you wait one quarter of a second, just one quarter of a second, the message travels to the frontal cortex, which is the human brain, and you make a reasoned response. So wait for the second thought, Ajit. Don't say the first. So someone says, you know, I don't. Okay. Just listen to the you knows and you practice your patience because it grinds me when people say, you know, six times in a sentence. And I have a, and God has a sense of humor. My men's group, there's a guy who says, you know, every second word is, you know. And I have to just say, okay, God. You know once, you know two, you know three. So this is pretty cool. It's a small stuff is a problem. The thorn on the side is not the big stuff anymore. I'm grateful I don't have active disease in my home. It's just my wife and I. We have it around us in many ways and fashions of home, but we have this protective veneer, if you will, of this program for higher spirit that's there in our home, and very, very blessed for that. And my heart goes out to people who are confronted with violence or abuse or what have you. And if there are any Alateens in here, my prayers for you, because I've sponsored an Alateen meeting. I was a sponsor for an Alateen meeting. And to hear a 14-year-old boy say, my father picked me up and threw me across to the window, and saying it like he was just talking about the day's score. Or a kid saying, I stole my grandmother's bottle of wine. I said, why? So he said, if there's ever a time when I'm in a lot of pain, I can drink it. And I looked at him, I said, do you realize that doesn't take away your pain? It just hides it for a while. It'll still show up. Can you make a commitment that you're going to return that bottle? And he looked at me, said, yes. I don't believe he probably followed through, but if you're an Alateen, and if you have people in Alateen, God bless you. And I hope that life turns around for you and you grow and get beyond the perfidy that you're probably experiencing in your life. Anyway, so last thing was we decided we're going to seek therapy. we go see the therapist and what have you. That didn't work. Then finally I said, what the hell am I doing in this house? I can walk out. We've got a small condo, no children, no nothing. So I pick up my bag, and as I'm walking out, I feel like Porky Pig walking out with a, you know, hibbity-hibbity walk on. And she walks up to me and she says, if you leave, I will commit suicide. I said, that I want to watch so you don't botch it up. I was very, very angry. I was so angry. I've lost a friend to suicide, so I'm not diminishing what suicide is all about. I sponsored this young man. And at that time, I didn't give a hoot. I looked and said, that I want to watch so you don't botch it up. And I followed her from the door to the kitchen. The kitchen is about where the speakers are. There's a little bit shorter of that. And I didn't know that she had changed her mind from suicide to homicide. There were knives and dishes flying at me with accuracy that was beyond belief. I'm dodging it. I don't want to run out because what will they say, my neighbors? Which brings me to the conclusion, why do alcoholics get anonymous after they get sober? If you got sober before, while you were drinking, my life would have been very, very easy. Anyway, I finally decided I'm going to go find a solution to this problem, because she was not drinking the way I wanted her to drink, which was two glasses of white wine, specifically Chardonnay. So my God sent Ann Landers, my second angel. Ann Landers and Detroit people said, if you're a child or mother or whatever of an alcoholic, go to Al-Anon. I said, finally, someone's going to show me how to get this woman sober. So I strode into my very first meeting, six women, and I teasingly say they were from the Ice Age. They were younger than I am. One of them had a Comfort dinosaur puppy, and I walked up to the deadest of them all, and I said, this is the arrogant me. Really arrogant, pardon the expression, prick. I walk in, I said, how did this work? And she said, pointed me to the literature table. She said, there's a pamphlet called 12 Steps. That's how it works. Didn't explain anything. I walk up, pick it up. I'm a pseudo-intellectual. It's got an escape clause at the top. It says, these steps have been taken from Alcoholics Anonymous and adapt for Al-Anon, which means some apply, some don't apply. So I look at the first step, admitted I was powerless over alcohol. No, I wasn't. Came step two. Made it, you know, had someone more sanity, restore me to sanity. I'm the sane one. She's the insane one. Sane people don't promote homicide, a suicide, and don't contemplate homicide. I had actually thought of killing her. And they don't sniff and kiss. You've done that? Yeah. Hello, dear. And you get buzzed. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Why give back to Him that which He's given me in the first place? Move on. Step four, I'm perfect. Step five, image management. I'm not going to tell you if anything's wrong. Are you crazy? Move on. Six and seven don't apply. Seven has the word humble. That's alien to my vocabulary. I'm so humble. I'm proud of it. Moved on. Eight, people at harm. They deserved it. Nine, when is she going to make amends? This is the sick man right there reading this stuff. And I said, now what? She was a psychic. She looked at me, come, please come back. I said, why? And she said it exactly like this. She said, because you're sick. I said, holy cow. How did this woman so emphatically say this? So I went, every 6 weeks I'd go back. And I got caught up in the orthodoxy of the program. I started getting into the literature. I started understanding what diseases. I argued about the disease. If you ask me today, is alcoholism a disease? I said, I don't know and I don't care. I plead ignorance and apathy. I don't know, I don't care. Why? Because my problem is obsession with behavior. You could be, a friend of mine asked me, do I belong in Al-Anon? Because he's also in AA. I said, you stand on the sidewalk, the next person that walks by, if you don't obsess over them, don't come back. He came the next day. It's because my former wife's obsession just was not alcohol, it was food, it was spending. God's sake, we had the UPS guy at the door all the time from QVC. And so my obsession moved right along. It's just insane. One day I was talking to her when she found sobriety. I said, you know, you alcoholics, you give up booze, then it's cigarettes, then it's sugar, then it's exercise, da 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 da. And the voice inside said, now, isn't it interesting? Your obsession has moved right along. So in actuality, for my Al-Anon brothers and sisters, I think we are crazier and nuttier than the drinking alcoholic. Because the alcoholic has a t-shirt that says, I drink, I get drunk, I pass out, no problem. I have to get up, walk across this prostrate person on the floor whose mouth she's pulling out stuff that smells like alcohol, and I go to the garbage can to check on what she's been drinking. And I criticize, critique it. Kmart champagne, how gauche. Red wine with a screw top? She didn't let it breathe, for God's sake. What a snob. What a snob. I told my sponsor that. I said, Don, I'm a garbologist. He said, that's nothing. Sponsors always come from a one-upmanship school. You're an idiot, they become bigger idiots. So he says, I worked in the military with a flashlight in my mouth at night to focus on chiefs because it was dark. And that trait came in handy. I could put a flashlight in my mouth and go through two garbage cans at the same time. I didn't have the heart to tell him, go to your local Granger supply store and buy a helmet with a light, a miner's helmet. So if you are into digging through garbage cans at night, there is a helmet, a miner's helmet that has a... It wasn't until I was transferred to Chicago, I went to Schaumburg, my first meeting there, and I was arguing about this disease thing. Why is it like cancer? Why is it like diabetes? And I'm not suggesting you do this at your Al-Anon meetings. It's against the suggestions of our traditions. We follow Cal-approved literature only. They chose to take a group conscience and have a big book of AA in the Al-Anon meeting, and they suggested that I read the damn book, at least the first 164 pages. So I did. And for the first time, I came to the awareness that this disease transcends physical, physiological, psychological, and other realms of disease and enters places that Jung and Silkworth were unable to actually put their arms around it. How do you do that? So now it's starting to happen. But what happened is I got caught up in the glitter of the program. So this orthodoxy, reading the literature, conceptualizing on the steps, philosophizing on the steps, I'm not walking the talk. I'm just talking, 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 reading, 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 analyzing, 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 and philosophizing. It's not helping me, but I think I'm doing a great job because I can put two sentences together. People think I'm actually working a good program, or you share so well. And the ego was really liking that. Today, I look at my ego like a little boy, and I just pat it on the head, say, okay, we know you're here. Let's not get into an issue here. And then I moved to Southern California. That's when the image management just flared up. Because the language in Al-Anon is so seductive. You say six slogans, and people think you know what the hell you're talking about. My son told me one day, he said, Dad, you should write a book about all this. You say such wise things. I said, son, those books have been written. I'm just regurgitating. And I'm speaking at conferences like this, and I'm speaking at meetings, and I'm chairing this, and the IR, GR, DR, NR, whatever R's I'm running around doing that. So I have this veneer of, wow, I'm service. But I haven't taken that journey into the depths of the desert. I haven't taken that walk of step four. I haven't really looked at step one in terms of what powerlessness is all about. I hated the word powerless because I said in step one, it says powerless over alcohol. I admit that. But when Al-Anon says I'm powerless over people, places, and things, now that's a problem for me. My ego doesn't like that. And we start to argue. And today it's different. Today I understand my powerlessness. In fact, there's a Sanskrit saying which loosely translated says, I am the vehicle, you're the driver. So when I turned my will in my oven, I fought that. On step two, I argued. And my sponsor, God rest his soul, he's crystallized steps one and two for me. He said, step one, you identify the problem. Well, because a lot of times what you think is the problem is not the problem. Alcoholism is not the problem. Obsession with behavior. I have choices that I choose not to take. And then I blame the alcoholic because it's easy to be the victim than be the volunteer. And I'm not suggesting that everyone has the ability to get up and leave, but if I stay in the problem, it gets larger. It looms larger and it occupies my midbrain and my lizard brain and my frontal cortex is not connecting. So I'm sitting there in step one, he said, and Chuck C's book, New Pair of Glasses, he identifies that beautifully. He said, this man says he's afraid of dogs. And Chuck C, this guy, my sponsor said, why are you afraid of dogs? He said, because a dog bit me. He says, why did the dog bite you? He said, because I was running. He said, why were you running? So I was just chasing a girl. He said, see, your problem is not dogs, it's women. So you literally have to parse through what appears to be on surface the problem, because they say in the book of Course in Miracles that perception, a miracle is a shift in perception. Because when I see things slightly differently, and it usually helps by reasoning it out with someone else. I was reading a book on the brain, how the brain works, and he says, and it's all Al-Anon AA talk in there. He says, when your confronted with a situation, it's your lizard brain that's reacting, or your midbrain, which is like a big elephant, and your frontal cortex is like a little mouse. The mouse cannot get into action till the big thing stops. And the way to stop this big thing is to talk to someone else, because they're not emotionally connected to your problem. The emotion is what corrodes reason. It's passion that messes everything up. So if I can wait for that to stop, then I can be more reasoned. And that's, if I can do this 2 times out of 10, I'm successful. Step 3, I argued with, why is God male? God shouldn't be male. Why am I giving God what's God given to me? Blah, blah, blah. And I heard Joe and Charlie, the guys who do the Big Book of Alive, put it beautifully. You're turning your thinking and your actions over. And it's just a damn decision. You set the intention. For me, step 3 is not a step of surrender. It's step 6 and 7, where the actual action of surrender happens. Step 3 is simply saying, I'm willing. I'm willing, God, whatever you are. I don't say a God of my understanding. To me, my God is beyond my understanding. I don't know what this God thing is. It's so vast. If I capsulize it and make it teeny-weeny and make it a God of my understanding, then I'll manipulate this thing. At least I'll try. Step 4, this is what happened. My wife got sober in 83, and about, we had babies in 85, and then another one came in 87. And my wife came up to me and she said, I've been having dreams and visions and feelings that have come from the past, and our marriage is going to change. Things that happened to her at the hands of her father, a priest, and an uncle. And you know what I'm talking about. It altered our marriage to the point where 7 years later, she came up to me and she said, we were sleeping in separate bedrooms, the whole 9 yards. This marriage is over. And it was July 4th, 1996, when I was asked to leave. And I packed my bags and I walked out. And I won't describe all the drama that happened prior to that. I don't have much time. And my divorce therapist said, do not get involved with women. I said, I'm moving to the island of Lesbos. So there are women, but I won't be involved with them. By the way, there is such an island in Greece, and I've been there with my wife. And there is no such thing like that, but I was so bloody arrogant and mad. So I go to my, this is July 4th, and August, beginning of August, I go to my meeting in Irvine, and this is my second angel. She's sitting there, the chair empty next to her. She has a vision of beauty, and I had a crush on her to begin with, but I never did anything because of, I was married. And we got into a relationship. And the divorce therapist told me that if you get into a relationship before a year is over, you'll get slapped in the head and you'll come to. And I ignored it. I said, I rationalized. I've been transitioning for 7 years. Who cares? It's going to be okay. This woman gave me everything that was lacking in my marriage and more. But as had been predicted, I got the 2x4 across the head. It was like a guillotine that chopped my head off. It was worse than my divorce. I walked up to my sponsor and I said, Dean, do you have a gun? And he said, why? I said, I'm in so much pain and I'm a coward. Why don't you just shoot me and put me out of my misery? Instead, he said, when was the last time you were alone? And when was the last time you've done your fourth? This is why I call her my second angel, because that fourth step that he had me do, he had me lock myself up for 3 days. He suggested, my sponsor never directed me to do anything specifically. And he said, I said, Dean, I've done the 3 columns. I've done the, what you call the blueprint. He said, no, for you, we're going to go to page 345 in Courage to Change. First question is, who am I? I have no bloody clue. I'm writing. All the anger is pouring out about my father not playing cricket with me, not telling me he loves me. My mother this, my sister's that, the victim was just pouring out. Second question, what are your values? And he changed it for me. He says, what do you value and how do you show it? Action. Most people say, oh, I'm a grateful Al-Anon. What are you grateful about? This guy, I heard an AA speaker says, no, any fool can feel grateful. Be grateful. And that's what my sponsor was showing me. What do you value and how do you show it? Action, action, action. What traits of character do you wish to keep? What traits of character do you wish to get rid of? 3 days later, I heard an AA speaker say, I had my feet firmly planted in midair. And I realized for the first 17 years in Al-Anon, my feet were firmly planted in midair. And that afternoon, that Saturday, Friday evening, I heard the thud, my feet hit the ground, and I heard Darth Vader say, welcome to the dark side. Because I had denied every defect of character I denied is right there on paper. Today, I don't identify myself by my defect of character. I don't say I'm jealous, I say I'm experiencing jealousy. I don't say I'm angry, I say I'm experiencing. I distance myself from my trait of character because this too shall pass. In the Indian, what you call ancient scripture, the man asks God, he says, who is a realized man? What? Time's up. Is that God calling, saying, tell the truth? Anyway, so he said, what are the qualities that control a man? He said, there are three qualities, quality of truth, quality of passion, and a base, even lower quality. And he says, a realized man always in possession of the higher quality. He said, no, a realized man knows that one quality will dominate the other two at any given time. This too shall pass. Don't take yourself too damn seriously, Ajit. If you're feeling pious, this will pass. If you're feeling crummy, this too shall pass. So I don't identify myself. So I got about 5-6 minutes left. I'll wrap it up here. I did my fifth with my sponsor. What a move to trust someone and to expose myself as I did. And I'm so grateful to that man because he taught me the meaning of the word integrity. We had lost our meeting room in Tustin. He never dictated anything. He showed me by action. We lost our meeting room in Tustin. I lived in Irvine at the time. We walked to the Irvine, what you call community center. And they said, sure, you can have a meeting here. And you only pay $60 a year for cleaning and what have you. We'll make the coffee for you, put out the chairs. I said, fantastic, this is great. Take the form. She said, but 95% of the attendees have to be from Irvine. As I'm walking out, I look at Dean. I said, how will they know? He said, we do. And I felt this little and this large at the same time because he taught me it doesn't matter about who knows as long as I'm walking the path I need to walk. My wife and I were dating and she asked me in a moment of passion, a moment of talking. She had brought a lot of trust issues as a baggage, as I did my own baggage. And she said, did you ever stray in your marriage? And I said, no. And I went to my sponsor. I said, I have a couple of times. How dare she ask me something that happened 30 years ago? And he said, look at me. He said, so what are you going to do about it? I said, I have to tell her the damn truth. I can't start a marriage, a relationship by a lie. He never said, oh, you got to go do this and do that. No, he just said, so what do you think you should do? He trusted me to take the right action because he had guided me all the way along, not by saying anything, but just walking with me. 6 and 7 are my underpinnings today. In 7, I humbly, and I like a Franciscan monk. I'm not going to mention him. If you know who I'm talking about. He's written a book on the 12 steps. I'll mention it, Breathing Underwater. Anyway, he says in step 6, you stop, God takes over. Become entirely ready, God is taking you. And I said, I like that. Because I wanted to sit and analyze step 6. What's my payoff? What's this? What's that? To me, it became an exercise, an intellectual whatever. So 7, humbly ask him to. So I become aware of something. I accept it without reservation. Acceptance, they say, is admitting the existence of a reality. You don't have to like it, says. And 7, you humbly ask God to take it away. And it goes away for 30 seconds, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 months, 3 years, who knows? 8, I like 8. I'll just tell you this. I think I'm coming to a close, aren't I? Okay. 8 is, this guy says there are two types of guilt, real guilt and neurotic guilt. And I suppose most of us suffer from the neurotic guilt kind, at least I did. Sorry for being sorry for being sorry for being sorry. He says real guilt has restitution, which flows into step 9. And he talks about this ant and this elephant that worked in a circus together, and they fall in love, and they're married. And the night they consummate their marriage, the elephant dies. The ant wakes up the next morning watching a dead elephant next to her, looks heavenward and said, oh my God, for one night of pleasure, I have to spend a lifetime burying it. That's neurotic guilt right there. So today someone says, you know, I'm going to make amends. I said, sorry. I said, sorry doesn't cut it. You got to change. My 4-year-old at one time told, Dad, you say sorry all the time, but you don't change. I asked him to be my sponsor, but he didn't know what the hell I was asking. My son, Corey, he was a middle child. He's the middle child. Very angry. Very angry. Living with me. He said, Dad, when I leave you, I'm never going to set my eyes on you. I said, what are you so angry about? He said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, well, if you change your mind, I'm there. He came a couple days later to my room and sat across me and gave it to me with both barrels. Normally, I get defensive. I don't follow the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. I want to be understood, not to understand. I want to interrupt. No, it didn't happen that way. It happened. But for some reason, something descended on me, and I listened quietly, empathically, not actively, but empathically. What that means is I'm listening from a feeling to feeling. And even when he was done, I let him talk. I didn't say a word. I said, Corey, some of the things you're telling me, I remember, and for that, I apologize. But some of the things you're telling me, I don't recall, but that does not mean they did not happen. And I felt the temperature in the room drop, and I said, I can't change the past. My wife's former sponsor is a beautiful saying, there's no hope for a better past. So I looked at him and said, I can't change the past, but are you willing to move forward? He said, I'll think about it. What an arrogant guy. 3 days later, he came and said, I'm willing. And today that young man is my business associate. He's actually totally running the business. I'm just sitting and counting the pennies when they show up. So I'm very, very grateful. This program has given me tools that work in the macro world of everyday living instead of the microcosmic world of just alcoholism. I'm grateful to the alcoholics in my life. So now comes my final angel, my current wife, because I still have Richard Rohr, the monk I mentioned, talks about we're all addicted to something, mostly patterns of thought. My wife, as I said, we were dating and there were a lot of trust issues. And we broke up 3 times in our dating. We met in 2005. And over the years, every few months, every a year or two, we'd break up because there were trust issues. The last time my wife broke up with me, my then fiance, I sat in the room at in my home on my hands and I said, God, if she comes back, I'm going to be okay. If she doesn't come back, I'm going to be okay. The transcendent moment for me at that time was I had an addictive aspect to my relationship. It was an aspect of need rather than want. And it was a moment of transcendence when I no longer needed to be with someone. I wanted to be with her if she chose to be with me. And thank God said, all right, now you're cured. We'll bring her back into your life. So we've been married now since November 1, 2011. I'm very, very grateful. The other thing that has contributed to my well-being, I didn't know feelings. I had no idea what feelings are. My men's Al-Anon group were talking about feelings one time, years ago, and I had no idea what the bloody hell they were saying. So I get in my car and sipping on a can of soda, and all of a sudden I'm feeling a welling in my chest. I said, oh my God, I'm feeling something, but I'm not happy, I'm not sad. I said, what is it? And carbon dioxide decides to leave my body, and the feeling was gone. Poof. Today, I have a different approach to feelings. I recognize my emotions, but I don't let them control my actions most of the time. I'm not telling you that I don't. Viktor Frankl puts it beautifully. He said, you got a stimulus, and you want to respond, wait, because yeah, then you're allowing that to control you, and I don't like to be controlled. So my wife has a palette of feelings. I used to tease and say, you're a human body that's actually a whole combination of feelings. And one day there was anger, and I looked at her and I said, you know, feelings are contingent upon perceptions. If you alter your perceptions, your feelings will change. It's true, but you don't say that to a person on the heat, right as you may be. So do you want to be right or do you want to be in a relationship? I decided that I better curb my pseudo-intellectual claptrap that I pick up from Matchbox covers. So I'll end it on this note. I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be in AA, and he should also be in Al-Anon. But he calls me up, and he has to talk about Al-Anon stuff. And I called him the next day, and I said, so how are you doing? And he said, I've come to the awareness that AA is a discipline for me. He said, I've been going to meetings, but I haven't really been doing the discipline. So what do you mean? He said, discipline is I have to go to meetings, I have to work the steps, and I have to be of service. And it struck me that that's what Al-Anon is for me. See, I was 10, 12 years in program and I hit the wall. I looked at my sponsor and said, it's called the wall of complacency. I looked at my sponsor and said, I go to meetings, I listen to the same pious claptrap. It's just pseudo-nonsense. People are jabbering away about stuff. The only thing profound is coming out of my mouth. I was being facetious. And he looked at me, he said, "You've hit the wall." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "A lot of us do." He had to. I said, "So what's the answer?" He said, "Go back to the basics." So today I'm very, very diligent about practicing my principles, working my steps. I work my steps from Reaching for Personal Freedom, or from this Franciscan monk's book, he has a workbook, or some other source that I'm doing the step work. I'm meeting, go to my meetings regularly, and I've started doing more service, not just in the group, but beyond the group, but not forgetting that the basic groundwork has to be the steps and the traditions. The traditions, my wife and I go to a couples meeting to enhance our relationship. It's not toil, it's an investment, because always there are communication issues. What I say and what's heard and what I thought I said and what she thought she heard can create a lot of problems. So on this note, I heard people say, "I go to meetings, but I get my stuff by osmosis." Now, you may be one of those wonderful people who are plant-like and you can have osmosis. I can stand in my garage for 20 years and I won't turn into my car unless someone shoves the exhaust up my rear and a transmission down my neck. It won't happen. So I'll tell you the story and I'll end it this. This man is at a gathering like this. He's sitting and watching people having fun, eating, laughing, joking, waiters and waitresses bustling by. No one's waiting on him. And he's getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And 30 minutes go by and he's ready to scream, and he gets up and he realizes he's at a buffet. So this program is telling me I can go to meetings. My sponsor said, "Remember one thing." I said, "How many meetings?" "You need one meeting, go to one meeting. You need 100 meetings, go to 100 meetings. But remember one thing, meetings are a huddle. You still have to go and play the game." And so on that note, either Kansas or Bengals will win tomorrow. Thank you.